Okay. So, you're familiar with Bhagavad Gita?
Yes.
Okay. So what I'm going to do is speak a little before going into the PowerPoint presentation here. Speak a little about the topic, the most confidential knowledge. The Sanskrit word for confidential is guhyam. Confidential. And there's a conventional sense of confidential, and that is, I've got something to tell you, but I don't want you to tell anybody else. That's one kind of confidential. Then another kind of confidential is where there's such an intimate connection between two people, the language that they use is completely understood by them and not understood by anybody else because of their intimate connection. They speak in a confidential way and others hear and they can't even understand. But there's another kind of confidential, and that's that which is very personal or dear to you. So that's discussed. The confidential knowledge is discussed in chapter 2, where the sense of self is understood through Sankhya, distinguishing matter from spirit, what the self isn't and what the self is. Because Arjuna's question in the beginning, chapter 1, and then the early parts of chapter 2, is Arjuna is inquiring, what is my duty? Here's this very challenging, difficult choice I have to make, decision I have to make. And I'm not inclined to go through with this fighting. But truthfully, I don't know what is my duty, so what is my duty? Please instruct me. Shishyasteham shadimam tvam prapanam. So the relationship changes from friend to instructor and instructed. And the beginning instruction is confidential. Paraphrasing here, Krishna is indicating that before we speak about what your duty is, let us first understand who you are, then we can talk about what your duty is. So confidential is to understand our identity as a non-material entity, spirit soul, a tiny fragmental part of the Supreme Spirit, distinct from matter. And Krishna then describes Buddhi Yoga, still in chapter 2, where intelligence becomes so fixed that one can move about in the world and do activities and duties and work and not lose that focus of proper sense of self. But then, going into chapter 3, Bhagavad Gita, Karma Yoga, working in the detached from the fruits of your work spirit, and surrendering or offering to sacrifice the fruits of your work to the Supreme. So now comes this very important concept of the Supreme. So then this comes more confidential knowledge. More confidential than confidential is, in addition to the individual soul, there's a Supreme Soul. Now there are some people that don't understand about the soul. And then there's some people that say, I accept there's a soul, but they don't understand about the soul. And then there's some people that understand about the soul. That's confidential. But more confidential, there's some persons that understand about the soul, but not about the Supreme Soul. Brahman, but not Parabrahman. Atma, but not Paramatma. So that's more confidential. And Krishna discusses that, more confidential knowledge. And the linking process between the individual soul and the Supreme Soul is the process of yoga and the different processes of yoga by which the individual soul can become aware of the Supreme Soul. And in the conclusion of the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna indicates, of all those systems of linking with the Supreme, one of them is superlative. It's the best. Yoginam api sarvesham madgatenam taratmanam shadhavan vajate yomam same yukta uttama mataha. Mataha means it's Krishna's opinion. But that's a gentle way of saying it's a fact, because Krishna's opinion is fact. Our opinion is take it or leave it. But Krishna's opinion is fact. So mataha. Then uttama, the uttama, the topmost form of yoga, in Krishna's opinion, is shadhavan bhajate yomam. Shraddha means faith, and van means possessing. Like Bhagavan is one who possesses bhagas, opulences. Shraddhavan is one who possesses shraddha, or faith. Shraddhavan bhajate. Bhajate is, bhaj is the root word of bhakti. Bhaj means engaging the senses with the object of the senses in an offering of bhakti, or love and devotion. Bhajate yo mam. Mam is first person singular. Me, Krishna. Bhajate yo mam. Shraddhavan bhajate yo mam. Krishna indicates, concluding verse of the sixth chapter, the uttama form of yoga, of recognizing the individual and the Supreme, and the linking between the two, the uttama form of that is shraddhavan bhajate yomam, and with faith, offering whatever it is that one has at one's disposal, whatever resources or facilities or faculties that one has, offering them to the Supreme in love and faith. We're going to hear in chapter 9 some additional message about faith. Krishna speaks again about faith in chapter 9. Then the beginning of chapter 7, Krishna says to Arjuna, now I'm going to explain to you how to do this one, the uttama form of bhakti. How to practically carry out the activities of shraddhavan bhajate yomam. And so the middle six chapters of Bhagavad Gita are addressing that. The process of bhakti and how to perform it. Okay, so which one of you three are the best student? You're all equal? Is one of you smarter than the other three? I'm going to ask you a math question. I'm going to ask you two questions. How many chapters in Bhagavad Gita? 18. 18 chapters in Bhagavad Gita. What is 18 divided by 3?
6.
6, that was good. You sure? 6 plus 6 plus 6 equals?
18.
Okay. So there's 18 chapters in Bhagavad Gita. And now I'm going to describe how our Acharya, Baladeva Vidyabhusana, has described the composition of Bhagavad Gita. 6 and 6 and 6. The first 6 chapters of Bhagavad Gita, there's summarization in chapter 2 of the whole Bhagavad Gita, but the main topic of chapter 1 through 6 are the instructions of Krishna in the first 6 chapters, is on detached work. Karma means, guys, work, activity, karma, specifically fruitive work, karma. So, karma, pala, you know what pala means? We're giving a quiz, you've got to pay attention here. You can join the quiz answerers. This is keeping the kids involved at the time. Pala. Pala. P-H-A-L-A. Pala. Meaning? Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Patram Pushpam Palam Toyam Yome Bhaktya Prayachati. Pala means? Fruit. Fruit. Like an apple, or an orange, or a pear, or a banana. They're in the category of fruits. The Sanskrit word is pala. So there's karma pala. Come on guys, pay attention. Karma pala, the fruits of work. You do some activity, and there's some fruits of that activity. So the teaching in the first portion of Bhagavad Gita, primary principle teaching, is karma pala tyag. Tyag means renounce. Do you know any family named Tyagi? I know some families named Tyagi. Tyagi is a renouncer. Or tyag means to renounce. So to give up the fruits of one's work. How to work? In the detached spirit from the fruits of one's work. So how do you do that? You offer the fruits to the Supreme by yajna or sacrifice. And so, karma yoga, especially nishkam karma yoga, yoga without attachment to the fruits of enjoying the work, the fruits of the work that you do, but offering the fruits to the Supreme, that's the message of the first 6 chapters. Primary message. Karma pala tyag. Or karma yoga. Linking oneself with the Supreme through offering the fruits of one's work to the Supreme. Detached work. Offering the fruits to the Supreme. And the final 6 chapters of Bhagavad Gita starts with chapter 6, 13. 6 plus 6 is 12, right? So the next chapter is 13. So from 13 to the conclusion of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is presenting more detailed knowledge about things that he has already given principles for. He's elaborating on jnana, details of knowledge. So karma yoga, the final 6, jnana yoga, and the middle 6, bhakti yoga. Because Krishna says at the beginning, chapter 7, through the end, chapter 12, devotional service, he's going to explain how to perform devotional service. So that's the middle section. Now, I'm looking at you 4 scholars over here. I'm going to ask you 3 questions. If you have valuables, like jewels, something heirlooms handed down through the generations and given to the family, where do you put those valuables? Do you put them, here's three options, at the front gate. Of course, here in America, we don't have gates so much, but at the front gate. Or in your backyard. Or in the middle of the house. Front gate, backyard, or the middle of the house. Where do you put your valuables? There we go. There we go. Thank you. Thank you very much. Similarly, because there's these three components of Bhagavad Gita, Karma Yoga, Bhakti Yoga, Jnana Yoga, the most valuable portion goes in the middle. Bhakti Yoga is in the middle. Next question. When there's a parade, let's say the President of the United States, of course he's now being re-elected, so, or maybe not, but some VIP is in a parade. Do they put him in the middle, the beginning, or the end?
Middle.
In the middle. I'll tell you guys a little story. When in 1970-something, 4 or 5, the ISKCON opened a temple in Vrindavan, Krishna Balaram Mandir, and the governor of UP was invited to attend. So when he came to attend the opening and installation of the deity, the third day of the Pran Pratishtha ceremony, and the official opening of the temple, he cut the ribbon and everything. He came with a whole entourage. In the beginning was the military guys. Make sure everything's safe for the governor. Came all the way from Delhi. And then in the middle was the governor. And in the end was all the ministers and ambassadors and all those other VIP people. But he was in the middle. Because that's just standard. The VIP in a procession goes in the middle. So similarly, Baladeva Yuvasan explains that most important portion of Bhagavad Gita is in the middle. Bhakti, in the middle. Detached work, details of knowledge, devotion to Krishna. Then a third question. What's the most important part of the house? Let's say a house that is shaped like this, they call it an A-frame house. Is it the doors and the windows? Or is it all the fixtures on the side? Or is it the main support beam that holds the house up? It's the main support beam. Once you have the main support beam in place, then the doors and the windows have some value. Otherwise, they can just lie in a pile somewhere for a long time. And all the fixtures and fittings. And without the main support beam, the others don't have utility. Similarly, the main support for the whole of Bhagavad Gita is bhakti. Therefore, it's in the middle of the house, middle of Bhagavad Gita. And the other features, karma and jnana, they receive their meaning and value from that which is in the middle, bhakti, without which they don't have the same meaning and value. Bhakti gives real meaning and value to them. And therefore, the structure of Bhagavad Gita is that bhakti is in the middle. And now here's another math question. Hello? Math question. There's how many chapters in Bhagavad Gita?
18.
What's 18 divided by 2?
9.
This is chapter 9. It's right in the middle. It's the middle part of the middle portion of Bhagavad Gita, where naturally the most confidential knowledge, because there's Confidential. What is the soul distinct from matter? Who we really are. More confidential. What's the individual soul distinct from the supreme soul? And the most confidential knowledge is the activities of loving exchange between the individual soul and the supreme soul. That's the most confidential knowledge. That's what we're going to be discussing. The exchange between the devotee of Krishna and the object of love, Krishna himself. And the exchange back and forth, the flow of loving transaction or dealing between them. That's the most confidential knowledge. So that's our subject matter. Now I want to do a very quick overview of chapter 9, Bhagavad Gita. There's essentially three parts to this chapter 9, Bhagavad Gita. And the first part is the Mahima section. Krishna's saying, Raja Vija Raja Guyam Pavitram Idamutmam Pratyakshav Agamam Dharam Susukam Kartam Avnyam. It's best. Raja Guyam is that's where the title comes from. Raja means king. King. Raja Guyam, the most confidential, the king of confidential knowledge. Raja Vidya, the king of knowledge, the king of confidential understanding. Pratyaksha Avagamam Dharmyam, that gives direct perception of the self. Pratyaksha means directly perceive. You can directly perceive the self. You can't see the soul with these eyes, but with ninth chapter understanding, you can perceive the soul's presence. That's very confidential. Pavitram, completely pure. Idam uttamam, the topmost of Mahima, that Krishna is describing the glories of this section. And then he says something very important, again connecting with faith, that those that are faithless, they won't understand. That's another reason that it's confidential. You could say it openly, and the faithless won't understand. You could say it again, and say it again, and say it again, and they still won't understand. Most confidential. And those that don't have that faith, they continue to take birth again and again in the different species of life in this world. Then, it's still in that first section, Krishna describes, he begins by describing the living entities and their relationship with the Supreme and the whole cosmic manifestation in which the living entities find themselves and the relationship with the Supreme. And he's indicating in this section that he's the source of that, but it appears that it appears otherwise by his mystic powers. He gives a metaphor. I call it Upanishadic double talk. Everything was in me and everything's not in within me. I'm within everything and I'm outside of everything. Upanishadic double talk. Because we can be in this room, or we can be outside this room, but we can't be in the room and outside the room. But Krishna can. And he is. Within everything and outside of everything. Cool, huh? He does it by his yogam aishwaryam, his mystic powers. And then he gives an example to help understand how is that. The example he gives is a very nice example. He says, there's the mighty wind. And the mighty wind is blowing. And the mighty wind is within the sky. But as the mighty wind is blowing within the sky is not affected. Although the wind is within the sky. And why is it not affected? The answer is that the sky is more subtle. So the wind can go, and it's the wind is resting within the sky. The sky is unaffected. So the wind is within the sky, and therefore the sky is also within the wind. Like, for example, you ever ride in an airplane? So you're going along the runway, zoom, 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 zoom. And you take off the ground. And now you're in the sky. You keep going and then you pass through a cloud. That ever happens? Pass through the cloud? You look out the window, what do you see? Clouds. And then keep going, zoom, zoom, zoom. And now you're in the sky again. So, what happened? In the sky, in the cloud, in the sky. Actually, all the time you're in the sky, because the cloud is within the sky. But when you look out the window, all you see is the cloud. So it looks like you're in the cloud. But actually, you're in the sky. Or the cloud is within the sky, and you're within the sky, so you're within the sky, and you're within the cloud. But so the, when you're even when you're in the middle of the cloud, you're also, the sky is there. The sky didn't disappear. So sky, 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 and then the cloud is within the sky. So Krishna, like that, Krishna says, everything rests in me, like the wind rests within the sky. But he, Krishna, is outside of everything, just like the sky is outside of the cloud. But at the same time, it's within the cloud. Depends on how you look at it. Both statements are correct. Krishna is within everything and he's outside of everything. He's within the heart of the living entity as Paramatma, but he's in the spiritual sky, in Vaikuntha Loka, in Krishna Loka. And in Krishna Loka, there's no physical, there's no material elements. He's there with no material elements, and he's here. Within everything and outside of everything at the same time. By his expansions, he's within everything. By his mystic power, he expands things. And he can also withdraw things because he has mystic power. So essential for understanding bhakti, one needs to understand the object of bhakti, Krishna. He has mystic powers. He has unlimited powers, potency. He's the potent with unlimited potencies. And he expands them. And by his expansion, he's present. But he also has his own separate existence in the spiritual realm. That's Krishna. So that's the first section. Krishna's the Mahima section. The amazing situation of Krishna in relation to material creation and how he is inseparable from everything and has his separate existence at the same time. So if you want to be devoted to Krishna, best you know who Krishna is. But he discloses. That's the first section. I think what I'm going to do is just move on to the next two sections. He describes, I'm not going to go through the same detail, he describes the process of bhakti, how it works, and then the conclusion is, when Krishna sees that in one's heart is real devotion, how what he feels towards those who are very intimately connected with him in devotion. That's most confidential. What does Krishna feel? I mean, it may be confidential to disclose what you feel. But what does Krishna feel? Most confidential. And Krishna discloses. He has such affection for his devotees that even if, one very important verse in Bhagavad Gita, even if, apichet, the one who is situated in devotion becomes circumstantially overwhelmed or covered by the material energy. then Krishna looks not at that, oh, he got overwhelmed by the material energy, but he looks at the consistent bhajate mam ananyabhav, this quality of undivided devotion. And when Krishna sees undivided devotion, he considers that to be sadhu, a saintly person. And if there's some discrepancy, he corrects the discrepancy, because he's bhaktivatsala, he's very kind. I'll give it a little example and one little message, and then we'll go on to the PowerPoint. The tide. Have you four scholars over here, have you ever been by the ocean or the Great Lakes somewhere? And you've seen the tide. Besides, the waves come in, crash on the shore, and then they recede. But over a period of time, the tide comes in. It comes several yards. And then there's high tide, and then low tide, it goes back out again. And then it comes back in again. And it's one explanation is the position of the moon by gravity brings the tide in. And then the moon goes to the other side, and the tide goes back out again. And then the moon comes around again, the tide comes in again, and then goes back again. So the tide keeps coming in and going out. Yes? So that's normal. But sometimes it's abnormal, like a tidal wave or tsunami. Huge, tall, towering wave keeps coming and coming and coming and coming and coming and coming, and it doesn't stop. And everything gets covered. Then after some time, it recedes. And it goes back to normal. High tide, low tide, high tide, low tide. So there are, like there's sometimes a tsunami where the tide, the normal, becomes abnormal. Similarly, sometimes in the life of one in devotion to Krishna, by circumstance, something that's just totally overwhelming happens. But it's not the normal position of that individual. I'll give an example. You know the example of Maharaj Parikshit. You four. You know who is Maharaj Parikshit? He's the one that heard Srimad Bhagavatam and Shukadeva Goswami spoke it. So before Shukadeva Goswami spoke Srimad Bhagavatam, there was a time when Maharaj Parikshit became the king. And one day, he was in the forest, and although he had perfect control of his senses, something happened that was very unlike Maharaj Parikshit. He became overwhelmed with thirst. That's not Maharaj Parikshit. He's sense control. But he became overwhelmed with thirst. So he was off in the forest, and he saw a hermitage of one sage. And he went to the hermitage of the sage to request some water. But the sage was in meditation. Not only meditation, he was in trance. And something happened. The king that has full control of his mind and senses became overwhelmingly angry. Not Maharaj Parikshit. He became overwhelmingly angry, like tsunami. Something just overcame him. And he insulted the sage who was in meditation. Didn't even hear a word he said. He said, what kind of a brahmana are you? You can't even receive the king properly? Stand and offer a seat and offer some water? What kind of brahman, what kind of sage are you? And he left. He spoke harsh words. That's not Maharaj Parikshit. I'm king and you should give me honor. That's not Maharaj Parikshit. Then a third thing. Just outside the cottage, there was a dead snake. So he, at the edge of his sword, he picked up the dead snake, went back into the cottage and garlanded him with the dead snake. Thinking, this is a suitable garland for a person like you, a dead snake. They left. And as he was going back to the palace, he had one of those uh-oh experiences. You know what I mean? Uh-oh. I did something really bad. What happened? I became overwhelmed with anger and spoke harsh words and overwhelmed with thirst and whatever came me. I made a big offense. I'm going to get a big reaction and I deserve it because I did something very bad. So that's like tsunami. Or maybe you know from the beginning of Ramayana. Even before Valmiki began composing Ramayana, you may know this one. He went to take bath in a river, and while he was taking bath in the river, he saw two birds, and a hunter pierced the body of the bird, and he saw the bird fall to the ground, and the companion bird was weeping and weeping, and with great anger, Valmiki uttered some words condemning that behavior of the hunter, and he then had that uh-oh experience. What just happened? I've never spoken harsh words like this in my life. Something overcame me. And the words that he spoke kept going through his mind again and again and again and again and again and again. He realized that there was a certain meter to the verse. And the meter to the verse was the meter by which he was to compose the glories of Ram. And then the tsunami went away and it was back to high tide, low tide. So there are circumstances in life, even of exalted persons like Maharaj Prakshit or Valmiki or small little people like us, where the normal standard bhajate, the devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, maybe circumstantially only, overwhelmed, not habitually overwhelmed, but circumstantially overwhelmed. Krishna says in this ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the real important thing is, bhajate mam ananya bhak. The person should be fixed in devotion, undivided devotion. Such a person, I personally intervene and correct their situation. I restore them to the position of unalloyed devotion. And last, the very last verse of chapter 9, Bhagavad Gita, is the very middle of Bhagavad Gita. Middle, like if you wanted to support the whole of Bhagavad Gita, just put your finger there. And nine chapters, and it's right there. Last verse of the ninth chapter. It is a very important verse. It's such an important verse that Krishna speaks it twice. Again, he speaks it in the 18th chapter. Manmana bhava madbhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru. You know the verse? Mam evaishasi satyam te pratijani priyosine. Krishna says that he gives four things, and this is the conclusion. Think of me, manmana. Become my devotee, bhava madbhakta. Madhyaji, worship me, mam namaskuru. When you go like this and say namaskar, you do that sometimes? You're taught to do that? What does that mean? I offer my obeisances, I offer my respects unto you. Mam namaskuru, offer your obeisances unto Krishna. So these four things are at the essence of what Krishna wishes for his devotees to do. Always think of him, become devoted to him, worship him, offer your obeisances unto him. So now we're ready for this presentation. I'm in part looking at you four young devotees because this presentation was prepared for young devotees in Chicago There's Gita camp. There's two Gita camps, just for boys and girls your age. And this was put together for them. And this young girl too. So, to learn Bhagavad Gita just by visual presentation. Of course, there's an audio portion. But if you listen very carefully, it's a very nice way to learn Bhagavad Gita. Probably a lot more interesting than listening to me speak. So let's go. The Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9. The most confidential knowledge.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "My dear Arjuna, because you are never envious of me, I shall impart to you this most confidential knowledge and realization, knowing which you shall be relieved of the miseries of material existence. This knowledge is the king of education, the most secret of all secrets. It is the purest knowledge, and because it gives direct perception of the self by realization, it is the perfection of religion. It is everlasting, and it is joyfully performed."
So inspired. He asked his father, "Can we have Rathyatra right in our neighborhood?" So his father built him a Rathyatra cart, and his mother named Prasad, who offered to Lord Jagannath, and he took the cart around the block with kirtan and distributed prasad.
Those who are not faithful in this devotional service cannot attain me, O conqueror of enemies. Therefore they return to the path of birth and death in this material world.
Can you think of an example from the description that you learned from the body of one person who came to association, not association and faith? He started from a nobody. Krishna repeated in his life, at the bottom of a well, and somebody lifts the stock and says, "Oh, my dear."
Bhagavatam,
Sometimes he would wash their clothes, and sometimes he would wash their supersoul within his heart, he became stunned. Tears came streaming from his eyes, and his whole body was trembling, and he felt great ecstasy. Then suddenly, as suddenly as that form appeared in his heart, it disappeared. So he opened his eyes and looked around to find where did my Lord go? And he heard a voice, and the voice said, "Normally, I don't show myself unless one has become a perfected soul, but I wanted to show my mercy to you." I wanted to show my mercy to you. So I've given you my darshan. Just continue like this for the rest of your life, and you'll achieve spiritual perfection. So that's what happened. He continued for the rest of his life. And at the end of his life, he describes that the body was finished, the soul left the body, the soul assumed the spiritual form. Swarup, it's called. Simultaneously as lightning and illumination occurred. And in that spiritual form, which is not made of material elements, but entirely of the realm of spirit, he was fit for the association of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but the Personality of Godhead had some additional service for him in the next day of Brahma. So he, along with the other living entities, entered into the body of Lord Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, and at the end of 4,300,000,000 solar years, Brahma's next day began, and he appeared as the son of Brahma. And in this life, as Narada, he described to Vyasa, he would travel throughout the three worlds, and even into the Vaikuntha realm, with complete freedom. No visa, passport, security check. He just played upon his veena, singing the names of the Supreme Lord, and he was able to travel wherever in the service of giving Yogam Aishwaryam, of how everything comes from him and he's situated separately from it.
Krishna's unmanifested form pervades everything, but Krishna himself remains detached from matter. Material nature, working under his direction, produces all moving and non-moving beings. By me, in my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, but I am not in them. And yet everything that is created does not rest in me. Behold my mystic opulence.
In Krishna. Maybe you know who is Atlas. But in New York City they have a statue. I'm just trying to pull up here. This is at Rockefeller Center. Atlas holding the world on his shoulder, big biceps, powerful shoulder. That's not Krishna. He holds everything, not this way. But just by his present potency. Rather, in this way, Krishna is in the spiritual realm. These three modes of nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance, are directing all the activities of the persons in this world. It's through the agency of Krishna's inconceivable energies that everything is done. same time, he's different from that distinction. So he's present as the Paramatma.
Although I am the maintainer of all living entities, and although I am everywhere, I am not a part of this cosmic manifestation. For myself is the very source of creation. Understand that as the mighty wind blowing everywhere rests always in the sky, all created beings rest in me. O son of Kunti, at the end of the millennium, all material manifestations enter into my nature. And at the beginning of another millennium, by my potency, I create them again. The whole cosmic order is under me. Under my will, it is automatically manifested again and again. And under my will, it is annihilated at the end. O Dhananjaya, all this work cannot bind me. I am ever detached from all these material activities, seated as though neutral. This material nature, which is one of my energies, is working under my direction, O son of Kunti. Producing all moving and non-moving beings.
Foolish persons do not know Krishna's transcendental and supreme nature. They consider the human-like form of the Lord to be material. The great souls, however, are undiluted.
Explicitly says in this chapter, that's not so, it's a misunderstanding. We make the distinction between the faithful and the faithless, the conceptions of the faithless and the conceptions of the faithful.
Fools deride me when I descend in the human form. They do not know my transcendental nature as the supreme lord of all that be. Those who are thus bewildered are attracted by demonic and atheistic views. In that deluded condition, their hopes for liberation, their fruitive activities, and their culture of knowledge are all defeated. O son of Pritha, those who are not deluded, the great souls, are under the protection of the divine nature. They are fully engaged in devotional service because they know me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, original and inexhaustible. Always chanting my glories, with great determination bowing down before me, these great souls perpetually worship me with devotion.
Externally being made and internally carrying perceptions they carry and what behaviors they engage in.
Others who engage in sacrifice by the cultivation of knowledge worship the Supreme Lord as the one without a second, as diverse in many, and in the universal form. But it is I who am the ritual. The sacrifice, the offering to the ancestors, the healing herb, the transcendental chant, I am the butter and the fire and the offering. I am the father of this universe, the mother, the support, and the grandsire. I am the object of knowledge, the purifier, and the syllable Om. I am also the Rig, the Sama, and the Yajur Vedas. I am the goal. The sustainer, the master, the witness. The abode, the refuge. And the most dear friend. I am the creation and the annihilation, the basis of everything, the resting place, and the eternal seed. O Arjuna, I give heat, and I withhold and send forth the rain. I am immortality, and I am also death personified. Both spirit and matter are in me.
Worshippers reach different goals. Men who want to attain the heavenly planets worship the demigods, and then take birth among them to enjoy godly delights. But such men, after exhausting their pious credits, return to earth. Men who worship ancestors go to the planets of the ancestors, and those who worship ghosts become ghosts. But one who worships Krishna with exclusive devotion goes to him forever.
Who study the Vedas and drink the Soma juice, seeking the heavenly planets, worship me indirectly. Purified of sinful reactions, they take birth on the pious heavenly planet of Indra, where they enjoy godly delights. When they have thus enjoyed vast heavenly sense pleasure and the results of their pious activities are exhausted, they return to this mortal planet again. Thus, those who seek sense enjoyment by adhering to the principles of the three Vedas achieve only repeated birth and death. But those who always worship me with exclusive devotion, meditating on my transcendental form, to them I carry what they lack. And I preserve what they have. of other gods and who worship them with faith. Actually worship only me, O son of Kunti. But they do so in a wrong way. Only enjoyer and master of all sacrifices. Therefore, those who do not recognize my true transcendental nature fall down. Those who worship the demigods will take birth among the demigods. Those who worship the ancestors go to the ancestors. Those who worship ghosts and spirits will take birth among such beings. Those who worship me will live with me. Whatever Krishna's devotee does, eats, offers, or gives away in charity, he does as an offering unto the Lord. Krishna reciprocates by carrying what his devotee lacks and preserving what he has. By taking shelter of Krishna, even low-born persons can attain the supreme destination. If one offers me with love and devotion a leaf, a flower, fruit, or water, I will accept it. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, and whatever austerities you perform, do that, O son of Kunti, as an offering to me. In this way, you will be freed from bondage to work and its auspicious and inauspicious results. With your mind fixed on me, in this principle of renunciation, you will be liberated and come to me. I envy no one, nor am I partial to anyone. I am equal to all. But whoever renders service unto me in devotion is a friend, is in me, and I am also a friend to him. Even if one commits the most abominable action, if he is engaged in devotional service, he is to be considered saintly because he is properly situated in his determination. He quickly becomes righteous and attains lasting peace. O son of Kunti, declare it boldly that my devotee never perishes. O son of Pritha, those who take shelter in me, though they be of lower birth, women, Vaishyas, merchants, and Sudras, workers, can attain the supreme destination. How much more this is so of the righteous Brahmanas, the devotees, and the saintly kings. Therefore, having come to this temporary, miserable world, engage in loving service unto me. Engage your mind, always thinking of me. Become my devotee. Offer obeisances to me. And worship me. Being completely absorbed in me, surely you will come to me.
Chapter of the most confidential knowledge, fulfilling the promise that he made over the from chapter 6 through chapter 12 of explaining to Arjuna how to shraddhavan bhajate yomam, how to, with great faith, fixing your consciousness upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and gradually achieving the state of pure devotion for him. And we heard how Krishna reciprocates with those who take up that process. So I understand for you young devotees here, there's regular instruction in Bhagavad Gita. Yes, there's a Sunday morning program for you guys. Saturday morning? When is it? Balaram, where's Balaram?
It's a Friday evening.
Friday evening and Sunday. So we invite you, Prabhus, to come join the class. You may be already attending. And when there are regular gatherings for all the adults to participate in, come and hear, just as Krishna said in this chapter, but by the process, faith is established by association, hearing, and service. Gradually, the dormant quality of the soul is awakened, the cleansing of the heart takes place, and the unfolding of the lotus of devotion to Krishna becomes naturally follows. So thank you for coming to participate, Hare Krishna. Any comments or questions? Someone knows how to turn on the light, please do that. Any thoughts you'd like to share or questions? Okay. No. Peaceful moving. Hare Krishna. Yes.
Can I ask a general question?
Okay, just speak up a bit so I can hear you.
Okay. So in general, how do we follow this principle? How should our morning and afternoon and evening be? For those of us who worship.
Well, I'll respond in a simple way. As we all do, unless you have a night job, you get up in the morning. And one of the first things you do when you get up in the morning is make the body clean. Make the outside clean. Clean body, clean clothes. Then next is make the inside clean. Take up some sadhana, some practice that is meant to cleanse the heart. Cheto darpana marjanam, make the heart clean. And the most recommended way for making the heart clean, particularly for this age of Kali, is associating with the holy names of the Lord. Harer Nama, Harer Nama, Harer Nama, Eva Kevalam. Like that, chanting God's holy name. And having cleansed the heart a little, then spend some time with the instructions that come from Scripture. How to conduct your activities for the balance of the day or the balance of your life. So there, this is so far supplying three principles. One is cleanliness. Cleanliness is next to godliness. So make your place clean, make your body clean, make your heart clean. Clean, clean, clean. Cleanliness, motive goodness. Second is that which makes the heart clean, sound vibration, the chanting of Krishna's name, most effective. And a third principle is that which gives direction to one's life. That's what Scripture does. How do I carry out my duties of life? On what principles should I do and not do different things? Not just moralities of do and don't, but as you're saying, you know, principles to live by. Those are found in Bhagavad Gita, primarily, Srimad Bhagavatam also. So, Prabhupada has given us this very simple to understand, easy to understand example of a train. If you want to go down the track, you have to have two tracks. You can't just have one and there's some, the other one's broken or missing. Similarly, as there are two tracks in the train, there are two parallel necessities for spiritual progress. One is that which cleanses the heart. And another is that which gives direction. So if there's one without the other, you won't go very far. If there is something that makes the heart cleansed, but there's not standard knowledge, it can be sentiment turns into fanaticism. That's in the world, and that's not a desirable thing. So then the other side, there may be standard knowledge, but the heart is not clear. So that becomes speculation, and this also doesn't get traction. So these two things, cleansing the heart, and receiving direction in executing the responsible task of human existence. And we also, something that we do every day besides getting up in the morning and taking a bath, is we eat. Most people do that. So another something to do is, just as Krishna says in this chapter, chapter 9, before you eat, make that which is going to be accepted as your food, offer that to Krishna. And then take the remnants of food that you've offered to Krishna as a prasad from Krishna, His mercy. Spiritualize your body by taking prasad. And then go about your duties. The daily, whatever that is. Someone may be a student, someone may be a professional, someone may be a housewife, someone may have, whatever their thing may be. Do that for Krishna. Also described in, so carry that consciousness from what you have done in the morning, making the heart pure, receiving direction, and carrying out the duties of life, and then you carry out the duties of life according to those principles, the guidance found in Scripture. Then again, at the end of the day, you come, wind up the day, the busy day is over. Again, make the body clean. Make ideal, if you have the capacity to do this, something fresh and clean that you wear. And then again, bring your consciousness to the Supreme here, perform some arati, or worship, hear the message of Bhagavad Gita, perform kirtan, chanting, refresh, cleanse yourself before you take rest, and look forward to the next morning of rising early and diving into the purifying sound vibration of Krishna's holy name and his instructions. We continue in the association of others who are like-minded. That's also important. Take the association of those who are on the path of elevation. Sangat Sanjayate Kama, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. The association that we keep determines the consciousness that we carry. So associate with elevated personalities, spiritually minded souls. Make a regular attempt to do that. We have some of our members here that live far away. It's tough to do that. So try to do that even by our present means, through some medium, recorded medium or live medium. There's all kinds of facilities for conference call classes and online this and that and the other thing. Take association through sound vibration, if not by physical proximity. It's available. It's a little effort, and one can find it. It's available.
So, there are I don't remember the exact verse, Maharaj, but there are three, four principles listed by Lord Chaitanya to the most important: Vaishnava Seva, Jiva Daya, Nama Kirtan. So, what is the role of service and Jiva Daya in this Yavapatil context of preaching? What is their role in purification compared to sadhana?
What's the role of what?
How important is, relatively speaking, preaching and services?
It depends on one's position. Maybe one's position is, in the beginning, I should just make myself cleanse. But as I receive something, it's always good to give that something that you received in a kind way to others. Look like it's prasadam time. It feels like the energy is moving. So I think we're going to end and let the energy move in a very natural way. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much.
Thank you.